Well, spring is almost gone and summer is unofficially here, which means it's time once again for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about our insect world, both the friendly kind and the fiendish kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, glad to have you back in the studio again.
We are back in the studio.
Yeah, we decided to go ahead and do this tonight since it'll just be Beverly, myself, and Wally is the only one answering the phone. So please give him a little break tonight and be patient.
Yeah, seems like a long time. It's good to be back.
It is. It's been, over 2 months. I've been in isolation. And I feel like I just got out of the hole in prison, you know. Fortunately, it wasn't all pitch black in there. And I did have work and other things to keep me busy. But it's nice to be back behind the control room. I was kind of wondering whether I still knew how to work this board, but apparently I do. So hopefully things will go smooth tonight. So we invite you to call in tonight with questions about our insect world. This is What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden. And the number to call is 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we hope we'll get lots of calls in. But again, remember, Wally Derleth is the only one on the phone tonight. So if it takes a little time for him to get to you, just call back and give him a little break as, sometimes it's tough being the only man on board. So, well, let's start off the show with an update. We've heard a lot in the past month or so about the infamous and fearsome murder hornet from Asia. Could you tell us exactly what this hornet is, where it's at, and what our concern should or should not be about it?
Right. It's actually called the Asian giant hornet, but people have started calling it the Asian murder hornet. The scientific name is Vespa mandolarinia, and the root word there being Mandarin, as in Chinese. And before I start talking about that, I want to back up a little bit and talk about their prey, which are honeybees. I read an article the other day that said that honeybees have had their own pandemic for the last 20 years. About 20 years ago, we started seeing a decline in honeybees, and that's because it was started off by being a Varroa destructor mite. Mites are small arthropods that are basically very closely related to ticks, but instead of sucking blood, they suck plant juices, or they are parasites. And in this case, they are parasites on the Varroa mite or on the honeybee. And then just recently, there's a new mite that came again from Asia, Tropelaeops. And there's always been a Nosema fungus. And so honeybees have had it rough for the past 20 years. And now we have the Asian giant hornet. First of all, right now they are confined to Washington State and British Columbia, and they garner a lot of attention because they are one of the world's largest hornet. They can be up to 2 inches in length. Comparing that to the largest hornet that we have here in the Arklatex area, and that would be the cicada killer, which is only about 1.5 inches in length. The other unique thing about this Asian giant slash murder hornet is that it has a very long stinger. It's about 1/4 inch in length, and they inject what we call a neurotoxin. A neurotoxin is a toxin that attacks the nerves, and in fact, that's this venom that is in the black widow is also classified as a neurotoxin. But here's the thing, they prey entirely upon honeybees. We think that they might be eating some other alternative insects, but what they do is they capture a honeybee, they basically chew its head off, and then they take the thorax, that's very rich in flight muscles, back to their colony. And that's something else that makes them different from our large hornet, the cicada killer, is that they are colonial. They are social insects. They live in colonies. And that's a good thing because normally when you're transporting insects from one geographical area to the other, it it's good if you just trace, well, it's not anytime good, but it's easy if the insect is solitary. Mm-hmm. But in order for these to be moved, you actually have to transport the entire colony. And so that's a little bit harder to do. And they are in subterranean nests, so they burrow and live underneath the ground. And so because they prey on honeybees, they're not at all aggressive toward humans. They're not at all similar to what we call the Africanized bees that are extremely aggressive. And so if you leave them alone, they will leave you alone, and because they really don't want to have anything to do with humans. They're just out there looking for their prey. And so it's not here. If it does eventually come here, it's not going to be a huge threat anyway, except for the honeybees.
And that, of course, is a concern to farmers and, you know, everyone who eats, you know, any kind of a vegetable or plant matter.
That's right.
Or for that matter, even, you know, much of the grass that is, you know, feeding cows and other things. You know, the pollinators are so key to that. And so we need to worry about it from that standpoint.
But because
at least they're not going to swarm me.
No, they're not a threat to humans. They're only a threat to honeybees. And you're absolutely right. We need to do more to protect the honeybees because, especially in the Northwest, it's one of the largest growers of almonds. Mm-hmm. And almonds are the crop that relies most on honeybee pollination. And you probably have heard me or Cliff talk about that, and I don't know who came up with this statistics, but normally one every four mouthfuls of food is dependent upon pollination.
Right.
And so we do need to protect our honeybees better than we have been in the past.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We'd love to have your calls tonight. All lines are open right now, so you'll get right in. And we'll move on now. We've talked over the past couple of years about a couple of invasive species in our areas. One is the Formosa termite. Is there any new information about the Formosa termite that we need to know or worry about?
Nothing really new, but for those that may not know what the Formosan termite is, it's an invasive species from Formosa, and better known as Taiwan. But the thing about it is that their colonies tend to be 10 times as large as a regular colony of termites. The native termites that we have here that we call subterranean termites. The other bad thing about the Formosa termite is that it will feed on living wood. And so the other ones just feed on dead wood, but these will feed on living wood, including trees. And so everybody out there, we're always screening, we're always collecting to see, you know, what the status is and where they may be so they can be taken care of in the proper way.
And how about the emerald ash borer, which I know has been plaguing many of our ash trees in the area and has encroached upon our area, I believe, from the northeast, but I'm not quite sure about that.
Actually, from the west.
Oh, from the west.
Excuse me, the east. Yeah.
Yeah.
It, the first that we heard about it in our area was over in Webster Parish, and that was about 3 years ago. And people that work with grounds crews, they're always screening for the emerald ash borer. When a tree is infected with the emerald ash borer, the limbs will be kind of spindled. They'll have a different look to them. And so it's still a pest. It's still here.
And it's destroying ash trees, which, of course, are vital to our baseball bat industry. So
that's very true.
That's a very key American thing. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we invite you to call in now at 800-552-8502. Any question about the insect world, both the friendly kind and the fiendish kind, are welcome. Again, that is 800-552-8502. All lines open right now, so you'll get right in. Now, as we've been battling, you know, a pesky little critter for the last several months called the coronavirus and fear of the COVID-19 disease that it inflicts upon people, recently there has been a lot of news articles about cats being identified as possible silent carriers of the coronavirus. And of course, many people wonder, you know, because there are many diseases that are also passed on by mosquitoes and other insects. Is there any fear right now that this coronavirus could be carried and passed on by any kind of insect in our environment?
Yeah, absolutely not. I'll talk about mosquitoes for a little while. There are only three groups of mosquitoes that are capable of transmitting diseases. Now, when a mosquito bites a person, it's like they're injecting two hypodermic needles into their tissue. With one, they're sucking out the blood, and with the other, they are injecting their saliva. And if a virus happens to be in that saliva, then it would get into the bloodstream. But we know that the COVID-19 virus is completely a respiratory, mostly a respiratory virus, and so the chance of a mosquito transmitting it is extremely unlikely. Now, when a mosquito does pick up a virus or a bacteria or a protozoan that can actually infect humans, it has to go from their gut into their what we call hemolymph. Insects don't have arteries and veins. Their blood just kind of sloshes around their body. So it has to go from their gut into their hemolymph, and then it has to actually invade the salivary glands. So it actually has to take a tour of the mosquito body, and not all viruses or bacteria can do that. And so the one genus that would be most likely would be a genus called a Culex, because it does transmit things like the West Nile virus and the encephalitis type of viruses.
And we heard about a lot a couple of years ago about West Nile and Zika. What is the latest information on either of those?
It's a steady state. You know, people are becoming more and more aware on how to check themselves for ticks. We know that you just can't go out into the woods and come back and go about your business. And so if the tick is caught early enough, then it doesn't have time to actually transmit. Well, West Nile is transmitted by mosquitoes.
Right.
I got off on something else there. But it's in a steady state.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Our first caller is online. Anya from Shreveport, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hi. So I was wondering, especially this summer in particular, or I guess this spring, there's been like really big fluctuations from freezing weather to like very warm weather. I wondered if that's been affecting maybe like insects coming out from what they think, like the ground and everything. I was wondering if there's anything to be on the lookout for.
Well, normally during those circumstances, the number one insect that's going to be influenced are grasshoppers, because grasshoppers do overwinter. And well, their eggs are laid in the ground. The eggs overwinter, not the actual adult. And if it's moist and warm, then a fungus will develop and kill the eggs. And since grasshoppers are not a big threat for the most part, then I wouldn't really worry about it. Thank you for your call, Anna.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. So we probably shouldn't be worried about locusts coming in and attacking us like they've had in Africa here this spring and summer.
Gosh, no.
That's good. I like to hear that, because I'm not real fond of locust attacking. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have phone lines open right now. But please, Wally Derleth is the only volunteer back there handling phones. So give him a little break and be patient with him. The number to call is 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. While we're waiting for the next call to come through, we do have some photos that were submitted through email to us. And by the way, if you would like to submit a photo of an insect for Dr. Burton to identify, you can send them to my email address. That's wbeckett, B-E-C-K-E-T-T, wbeckett@lsus.edu. That's wbeckett@lsus.edu. Jeremiah Penberthy sent in an image of a little critter. It's kind of a creepy little critter and wanted you to identify that. You have that before you, and it is online for folks who would like to follow along. This is on the What's Bugging You post for this month, near the bottom of our homepage, and you can follow along with her. What is that?
Yeah, Jeremiah is a student of mine, and he thought it was a scarab beetle, but actually it's a weevil. It's a beautiful pale green in color, and the head looks, well, I would call it more orangish, but it actually goes by the common name, the golden-headed weevil. And they feed on leaves of various hardwood trees, but never in enough quantity or population to actually harm the trees. But it's one of the most beautiful little insects that we have around here, and that's called the golden-headed weevil that feeds on leaves.
Okay. So it's kind of creepy looking, but not necessarily a pest to humans?
That's correct.
Okay. And then we also had another person who sent in, a Miss Joyner. She said, these are fast, teeny tiny little insects. When I remove the cover and sit on the patio, I imagine they are crawling all over me because I might not have noticed them because they're small. And she did send in a video of that, but we do have a photo of these tiny little critters up on our website. What are these things?
These are ants. And they go by the common name of odorous ants because they do emit a little bit of a vinegary-like smell to them. In fact, most all ants emit, it's not acetic acid like vinegar, it's formic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And they are one of the smallest species of ants that we have here in our listening area. And they are kind of creepy because people don't like the thought of ants crawling over them, but so they're what I would call just a pest nuisance kind of a deal. And in order to, if you have an ant problem and you can't follow the ants back to their nest in order to, you know, take out the nest, then I would suggest that you get ant bait. This ant bait might come as a solid or it might come as a gel. I prefer the gel ones. And the ants, it's sweet. It's basically ant food that's laced with a poison, and they'll take it back to their colony, and within a few days the colony will die out. And so that's one of the best ways to treat an ant problem if you don't know the source of the nest.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we do have lines open now. And Wally Derleth is the only volunteer back there, so please, be patient with him. The number to call is 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. I'm watching him type now. It looks like somebody submitted a written question, so he's typing that out. But in the meantime, we have Jeff from Jacksonville, Texas. Jeff, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Something has happened over here in East Texas this year that I haven't seen before, at least not in a long time. It's like about all 40% or 50% of the crepe myrtles are being affected, and about half of their tops are dying, and the foliage is really late, and it looks really sparse. I just wondered if that was insect activity or if you knew.
Well. A few years ago, we had an outbreak of crepe myrtle scale. These will appear as little white dots or patches on the bark, and they are feeding on the sap of the crepe myrtles. We had a very heavy infestation here on the LSUS campus. We have over 300 crepe myrtle trees on our campus, and the way that you would treat these is by what we call a drench. You pour it around the soil, and it's taken up by the roots, and then it's in the sap of the tree, and the insects will eat it, and they'll die. But these were not really, they were making the crepe myrtles seem kind of sickly looking, but not a dieback. And if it's not the crepe myrtle scale, I would have to actually do a physical inspection of the crepe myrtles. But if you see, go out and take a good look at the crepe myrtles. And if they have these white patches on them, you can pull them off just like a scab you would. And the immatures are motile, but once they settle down and become adults, then they don't move very much at all. And so that would be my best inclination, because we know it's here, and it might have bloomed back up. They might have had a population bloom due to the crazy weather that we have had.
I'll sure check that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, Jeff.
All right, and we have a full bank of phones right now, so we're going to just move right on, and you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. Please stay on the line, Kathy and Dave, because we've got Dennis before you. Dennis, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's your question tonight?
Yes, thank you very much. I've got like a cricket coming in my house there. I don't know, they got real long hind legs. I'm just curious what that was.
Yeah, those are called camel crickets because their body is kind of humped up like a camel, and those legs are very delicate. When they come into the collection, I just know that the legs are going to fall off when they do. But they mostly like dark, damp places. When we were kids, we would go down into what we used to call root cellars, and we would find camel crickets down there. They're absolutely harmless, but they might be somewhat of a nuisance. Do you have any idea, Dennis, how they might be getting into your home?
No, ma'am, I sure don't. Just all of a sudden, there they was.
I kind of fond of them because you don't see them that often. But, of course, in the insect world, you never say never and you never say always, because something is always still surprising me after studying this stuff for 40 years.
I could see that.
Yeah. So thanks for your call, Dennis.
Thank you very much.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we do have a couple of lines open now and two callers online. Kathy from Trinity, you're next. Dave from Alexandria, please stay on the line. Kathy, what is your question tonight? What's bugging you?
Hi, Dr. Burton.
Hi.
So my husband and I went to High Island, Texas yesterday, and it was a sunny day, and out of the trees was this just dripping water, and we finally realized it was like it was raining, that it was coming from the greenbrier vines, and they were covered with these sort of large aphid looking things.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just it was like it was pouring rain off of
yeah.
the greenbriers.
Let me explain that phenomena. When aphids feed on plants, and aphids normally feed on softwood plants, or herbaceous plants, not the actual trees, although they will feed on trees, but they're taking in enormous quantities of plant sap, and they have a very unique type of a digestive system that allows them to absorb mostly the sugar out of the sap and not so much of the sap itself. And so they are releasing the excess sap, and it falls down. Oftentimes when it falls on cars or other plants, that will cause a secondary problem with plants, because mold will then take up and start feeding off of that very diluted plant sap. So what was happening here, Kathy, is you were being rained upon by aphid pee. Yeah. So, you know, the aphids just release the very dilute sap. And some people think it's a tree. They'll say, oh, my gosh, the tree is sapping all over my car, when actually it's aphid pee.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, this was wet. I mean, there were wet areas on the ground underneath the vines. Cool. Do you have any idea what species it could have been?
Oh, gosh. There are literally, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different species of aphids. They're all in the same family, Apidae. But aphids sometimes are little what we call species specific on the general types of plants that they'll feed on. Most aphids will have a general group of plants, like there'll be vine plants, or there'll be herbaceous plants, things that we have, weeds. And so I would not have a clue. I would have to take and run them through a scientific key to identify them to species.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the information.
Thank you for calling, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. And you are great listening question. To What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we do have lines open right now. Dave from Alexandria, you're on with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Burden. You know the old saying, if you have a hammer, everything is a nail.
Yeah.
Well, I have a new battery-powered sprayer, and I have a jar of dormant oil that was left maybe 8 years ago by a landscaper. What is dormant oil good for? What insects will that protect from?
There are a lot of insects that feed on trees, and in the early spring, you spray dormant oil on the plant, and then when the insects emerge for the spring, it'll be toxic to them, and that prevents them from getting a stronghold early in the spring and damaging the plant too much. Some people prefer to spray it at the end of fall, but I would suggest spraying it in late winter, early spring, before things start leafing out. And it doesn't penetrate the bark, but it's there.
Okay, so it's too late now, but
yeah.
Next spring I have an opportunity.
You'll have to find something else to put in that brand new sprayer,
okay.
Dave.
Thank you very much, Dr. Burns.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your call. That's a great question.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. All lines are open right now, and you can get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question concerning the insect world, both the fiendish kinds of insects and the friendly kinds of insects, are welcome tonight. And we did have one caller who did not want to go on the air, but they had a question they sent in. Her question is that the Texas Highway Department sprayed Roundup along Highway 80. The grass is now brown, flowers are dying. What kind of effect will this have on the bee population?
Hardly any at all. Roundup does not act as an insecticide, but what it is doing is it may be destroying some of the wildlife flowers that the bees may pollinate, so they'll have to find their pollen elsewhere. And I'm surprised they're still spraying Roundup, but I'm not the one to tell the Texas Department of Roads what to do.
Yeah, that's probably not a useful thing. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist. All lines are open now. You'll get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding the insect world are welcome tonight. And we did have one more image sent in from email by Victor Laporte, who wrote, I was looking for some help identifying this beetle. It is eating the wood behind my sliding door, and there's a pile of dust on the ground. Insects are about 3/4 to 1 inch long and about 1/4 inch wide. Reading online, I thought it was an old house borer beetle, but my exterminator said it was some type of sawtooth beetle, and so he appreciates your assistance.
Yeah, he did have some other images of the actual termites, and after I finish answering this question, I'd like to talk a little bit about termites, because this is the time of the year that they might start their swarms, and I want to help. This would be an educating moment. But the big black beetle in the picture is called a ground beetle, and they are actually predators. They don't eat wood at all. One type of large beetle that's black that does eat wood is called the palisade or the darkling beetle, and we can find those in rotten trees a lot of bit when we go around, and they tend to be colonial, because when you find one, you tend to find a lot. But this is a common ground beetle, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually preying on the termites as they fall down to the ground or something of that nature.
Now, I will put those pictures up. I thought those were just other images of this same bug, but from a different distance, but I'll make sure I get those up then.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you how you can tell the difference between a swarming fire ant and a swarming termite. Termites' wings will be of equal length. They will have four wings, one pair and the second pair, and the wings will be of equal length, and their antenna are like Mardi Gras beads. Whereas a swarming fire ant, their first pair of wings will be much longer than their second pair of wings, and their antenna are elbowed. And so it doesn't take very, it's very easy to do to tell the difference between a swarming termite and a swarming fire ant. But if you do find swarming termites, you certainly need to have it investigated by a professional.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we did have a flurry of phone calls there. So, Joe, please hang on the line because we've got John from Fishville next. John, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
What's bugging me has been bugging me for 35 years. It's these fire ants that are just driving me crazy out here. I got about 7 acre yard, and this year I've changed my plan. I'm going to get them at the perimeter so they don't move into my property. And I think it may be working. The last time I did a mow on a little half-acre thing, there was only one hill out in the middle of it. So I'm bragging a little bit. I'm on number 3 trillion fire ants that I've killed this year. And I'm using about 4 different kinds of poison.
What are you using, John?
I couldn't tell you the chemical names of them. I don't have them out here in the yard with me.
Let me tell you the best one.
Okay.
I teach my freshmen how to read insecticide labels because it's important to know a little bit about the chemistry of the insecticide. Right now, the 3 most common insecticides are going to be pyrethrins or organophosphates, carbamates, and then there's this other type of chemical, and it goes by the name acephate, A-C-E-P-H-A-T-E, mm-hmm. And just a few granules of acephate on a fire ant mound will kill that mound, and it doesn't take them very long. Now, a lot of people think that fire ants, if you kill one mound, they just move. That's not true. Once you kill that mound is done with. What happens is that you'll see that, like you said, you have this one big mound in the center of it, your pasture, your property, and what you don't see is that they are dominating, they are suppressing other smaller fire ant mounds around the perimeter of that, in that area. So when the strongest fire ant mound is, you kill the queen, you kill all the sisters, the workers. What happens is that now these other mounds aren't being suppressed by what you might want to call the mother mound. And then they start to emerge, but of course they're going to be in a different location. But I strongly recommend acephate as my main go-to when I kill, when I want the fire ant mounds to go away in my yard. Yeah. And
Is it kind of a nasty smelling one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I've used that, and that's my favorite one.
Ah, see?
Yeah.
And the main one, I think it's put out by the Ortho company. It's surprising that there's only a handful of insecticide chemicals that you can buy, as they say, excuse me, over the counter. And Ortho is one, Bear is another, and so, but acephate smells, it's terrible smelling.
Yeah.
But it certainly does the job.
Now, the problem I have with the different ones is that I can't possibly water in these things, and I've always understood that the poisons that you have to water in are very effective to getting rid of the queen.
Mm. Well, it's certainly, by watering them in, you're actually, dousing, if you will, the queen with this insecticide.
Yeah.
But a little bit of acephate powder on top is easy to do.
Yeah. Now, I've really learned that you have a main mound, and then you always have these forager little hills that go out about 6 feet,
mm-hmm.
6 feet more, 6 feet more. And those are the ones that I've really been pounding on.
Good.
And then that main mound just sort of dries up because you've killed all the foraging ants, and I think the queen might be getting starved.
it's a good way of thinking, absolutely.
I know I'm out there every morning, and it just it's been my destination this year is to get control of these darn things. It's been 35 years since I've had control of them.
It's hard. It's yep. hard. You got to be diligent, and that sounds exactly like what you're doing, John.
Well, it's a project.
There you go.
I really appreciate your help.
No problem. Have a good day. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you, John. And our next caller, well, we think it's Joe, but we're not sure. Wally was in the middle of a flurry of calls. So you're on with Dr. Burden. Give us your name and where you're from.
My name is Joey.
Joey. Okay. Well, we're almost right. And where are you from?
I'm from Shreveport.
Okay. Go ahead with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight, Joey?
What's bugging me is bees.
Mm-hmm.
I got some honeybees around my house, and I called, I looked it up on the internet and called the Ag and the Bee Association, but nobody is harvesting bees. It's coming out to harvest bees. So I really got a problem with trying to get rid of these bees, but I can't get nobody to come get them.
Well, I don't do bees, and so I can't come and harvest the hive for you either. I'm really surprised that normally there is somebody that's with the regional honeybee association that will come out just as a community service mm-hmm. and take the hive away, whether they are going to then keep that culture, keep that hive alive and watch it. But I don't know what else to tell you. The thing sounds like to me like the only thing you can do is try to exterminate them the best you can. And I hate to see somebody, you know, killing off a honeybee hive, but if it's going to be a nuisance or perhaps even a health issue for
right.
somebody around there, then you're going to have to do what you have to do. And I would just go get some regular hornet spray and bee spray and just start attacking them. And then hopefully they'll finally give up and move.
Okay.
Have you tried calling the Honeybee Association or Hummers and Sons or any of the other honeybee growers in the area?
Yeah, I tried. I hadn't tried Hummers and Sons. I ran into Hummers and Sons this past fall season at one of those festival things in Bossier.
Mm-hmm.
At the, but he said he wasn't interested in coming getting any bees.
Hmm.
So, like I say, I call the association, and most of everybody is kind of not doing anything. I think they hadn't incorporated any young blood, new people in it.
Yeah.
And the older people are just, I don't think they is interested in tackling.
That's too bad.
Another bee.
I wonder if the extension office would be of help.
Well, he said he contacted the Ag Extension Office.
Yeah, I did, and that's who they referred me to was the
Bee Association.
The Bee Association.
Yeah.
You're in a tough spot, John. I can't.
Yeah.
That I gave you the best advice I can.
Well, you can always start your own honeybee honey manufacturing.
Hey, I've been trying to save them, you know, because honeybees is very important to our
ecosystem.
Yes, they are, Joey.
But you just gave me the green light, so, hey, I'm going to have to be a gunslinger now.
So. All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Joey. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we have Arthur from Benton. Please hold on the line because James from Lufkin is up next. And then we'll get to you, Arthur. James, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, Dr. Bird, I've been seeing these bugs for about 3 years, and I'm just curious as to what they are. I drive back roads for about 10 or 12 hours a day, and the only time I see them is they're crawling across the road, and they look like real big black asps, and there is thousands of them crossing the road. I'm just curious to know what they are and why I hadn't seen them before.
Did you say big black asp as in snakes? ASP?
No, like the big caterpillar, they're probably as long as your finger, and they're just, the only place you see them is crawling across the road. Last year I saw thousands of them.
I'm pretty sure I know exactly what you're describing. It's something that's called an army worm. And they're called army worms because they basically travel like a part of the army and they will cross roads. And what they're doing is they're going from one feeding site to another feeding site. And that's what they are. They are armyworms, and they can be quite devastating to certain agricultural crops, especially some of the grain crops that we have. My brother's a wheat farmer, and he battles them every once in a while. And they can be quite devastating because by the time they get big enough to actually see, they've already done the damage. Mm. And so that's a great question. Army worms.
It's okay if I run over them. Last year there was so many, I hate running over these. They're just everywhere.
I wouldn't worry about it. You know, they shouldn't be in the road.
Do they sting like a regular asswood? You know, like the...
Yeah. Here's the thing. They're quite hairy. And any caterpillar that has spines or hairs on them, you want to not to pick them up because some of these spines are designed to where the tip will break off and then a little venom will be injected into the skin. And so, or they can be quite irritating, almost like getting fiberglass on your skin. I always tell people that there's basically two types of caterpillars, smooth and hairy. And if it's the smooth kind, you can pick them up, but if it's the hairy kind, please, please just leave them be.
Okay. Well, do you know why that I've never seen them before? And I've been doing this for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. I've just seen them in the last 2 or 3 years. Are they invasive to this area? Or
no, they're not invasive. They're native to this area. And it might be that this surrounding where you're driving, so they might have harvested some trees and put in a row crop, and so that may be why you're seeing them. If it was just all hardwood trees, which is kind of sounding to me a little bit like the type of a area that you're driving through, but if they've gone in there and started farming those lands, then that would attract the army ants in. And after they pupate, when they emerge as adults, they're very nondescript little brown moths, and so it's the immatures, it's the caterpillars that do all the damage.
All right. Well, I won't feel too bad if I run over them again.
Nah. Get going where you need to get to.
Thank you very much, Dr. Burton.
Thanks for your call, James.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we do have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Only one line is tied up, so you'll get in pretty quick. Give us a call right now with your question about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind. And we go next to Arthur from Benton. Arthur, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, My question is about the giant roach or water bug. I haven't seen any lately, and when I moved to Louisiana from Wisconsin about 30 years ago, they were all over the place. So I'm not calling for them, but I'm just a person that monitors. I like to watch nature, and when I see nature changing, it interests me. That's like a barometer to me. So what happened to these? I don't see any of them, not one.
By water bug, that's used for two different, completely different types of insects. Some people refer to cockroaches as water bugs, and one of the largest cockroaches that we have in this area is the American cockroach. It can get up to about 2 inches or more in length. But there's also an aquatic true bug that has piercing, sucking mouth parts that's a predator in water. So I assume you're talking about the cockroach?
The cockroach, right.
Okay. They'll feed on any kind of decaying organic material, and if there's not any decaying organic material for them to feed on, then you're not going to see them. And you can always tell the American cockroach from another part cockroach that's quite large called the wood cockroach, and that is cockroaches tend to have their head covered by a round plate. I always call it the hood. And if you, it's going to be dark, but right around the edges, it's going to be white around that hood. And that way you know for sure that you're talking about the American cockroach versus the wood cockroach. And cockroaches can be annoying, especially if you let them take holes. But if you're going to have a cockroach around, the American cockroach is the least defense invasive into your home. And so let me ask you a personal question, Arthur. What part of Wisconsin did you come from?
I came from Milwaukee.
Milwaukee?
I spent
7 years in Madison. That's where I got my PhD, Madison, Wisconsin. And I married a Wisconsin guy, Wally, that's taking the phone that took your call.
Oh, yeah, he's a polar bear.
Yeah, and so, have strong attachment to the state of Wisconsin. But I love Texas and Louisiana and Arkansas and Oklahoma, too.
Mm-hmm. I grew up there. Well, when I came here, these guys would they told me that they called them that. They called them, I said they were giant roaches, and the people local said they call them water bugs.
Yeah, that's because they don't want to say that they've got roaches. Waterbug is a kinder, gentler name.
Well, the ones that I observed them, and they don't live in the house. They just forage in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they live outside. If they get trapped in the house, then after about, maybe a day, you'll find them on their back. But I haven't seen one. I used to see them. They were just everywhere. They find a way into the house, into the apartment, and whatever. And we bought our house in Benton about 15 years ago, and they were there then. But for about the last 7 or 8 years, I haven't seen not one, not around the outside or even coming into the house. So I just was wondering if they were, if there was some kind of a poison or more people using stuff on the fence rows to kill grass and weeds, if it was, something that us humans have done that might have, drove them away.
Normally an herbicide isn't going to have any effect on cockroaches. They're pretty sturdy animals, especially those larger ones. Well, all cockroaches are sturdy. Doesn't matter what the size is. But it's kind of, I'm sitting here grinning because I've had people call in complaining about seeing cockroaches. I've never had somebody call in complaining about not seeing cockroaches. And so I think that's a unique call. And thanks for making my day, Arthur.
All right. Thank you, Arthur. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. All lines are open right now, and you can get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. This question comes up every year around the springtime or this time, and that is, in the early spring, are there any precautions that you can take to mitigate the fire ant concerns that bother people like that one gentleman?
Not that I'm aware of. There's no pre-defensive actions to take care of fire ants. Some people like to put out fire ant poison whether they're there or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a waste of money if you ask me. But since we are waiting for another call, let me take an opportunity to go over the 5D strategy of controlling mosquitoes. And with all the rain we've had, and now it's warming up, mosquitoes are going to start being more and more of a problem. And that's the 5 D's. Drain all standing water. Don't go out between dusk and dawn. Dress in long sleeves to avoid being bitten. Defend yourself with an effective repellent like DEET or Picardian. And make sure the doors and the window screens are closed and in good working conditions. So that's the 5 D's. And you should always be out aware of how you can control the mosquito populations around your house, your apartment building, your neighborhood.
Now, I have family members who swear by Skin So Soft and a couple of other things like that it really repels them as well. Is that mostly that it just covers up what they're attracted to?
Yeah, they're attracted to certain body odors. And I'm very sensitive to mosquito bites. And so I actually try to use something that has DEET in it. The Skin So Soft doesn't repel them. It just covers up your smells a little bit. And while I'm talking about DEET, you can get DEET at different concentrations. And say if you get 10% versus 20%, the 20% will just last twice as long as the 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to reapply the DEET from time to time for it to be effective.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist. And we have about 11 minutes left in the show. And Joe from Shreveport, you're on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Hi. I moved into an apartment complex recently, and I know they used to spray once a month but I think they've stopped that. And I don't know if they're related or not, but I've had a fruit fly issue last couple of days or weeks, actually, that it seems like I'm catching tons of them, but they, and I'm like trying to be super clean, like there's no, there aren't crumbs anywhere. The garbage disposal kind of seems to attract them. And the, I've got some herbs growing in my kitchen that seems to attract them.
Bingo.
And, but I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know how to stop it.
Well, I can talk to you a little bit about that. I could also tell you an effective trap for them.
Yeah.
Actually, two of them. One is that you're seeing the adult fruit flies, but they lay eggs in very moist organic matter. And so I have a feeling that the herbs in your kitchen, you're probably overwatering them, and you're keeping them too moist. And so that's a breeding ground for the immatures of all flies are called maggots. And so you're literally growing maggots in your kitchen. Not a very fine thing to think about, but let those dry out a little bit more, and then don't over-soak the soil that they're growing in. Now, about trapping, you can do two things to trap fruit flies. One is to hang what we call yellow sticky traps, and they'll just fly into them and stick. But this is what I do at my house. My husband and I, we love to eat mushrooms, and I buy these glass jars of mushrooms at the store, and when we empty out that jar, I will take and put fruit juice, or even better yet, a little bit of red wine, and just put a small amount in there. I'll guess maybe have it be like a quarter of an inch deep, and then take the metal lid and poke a hole in it. And they will go down that hole because they'll be attracted to the fermentation, especially if you use red wine, and they'll drown in the red wine, and they can't fly back out. They will not be able
to... Just one hole?
One hole. And they won't be able to come back out, and then they'll eventually drown in the wine. And then you have to change that out every 3 or 4 days. And I swear by it.
Yeah.
And it's a good excuse to it's a good excuse to open up a bottle of red wine.
All right, perfect.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Joe.
Yeah, appreciate it.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we do have lines open, so you can get right in at 800-552-8502. Hurry up, because the show's almost over. That's 800-552-8502. We spend a lot of time on this show talking about insects that are a pest and that we don't want around and that are bothersome. What are some of the beneficial aspects of some of these insects that, while they may bother us, they may be useful to other parts of our ecosystem?
Well, we've already talked about the honeybees, and that's a slam dunk right there. Everybody knows the honeybees are great pollinators. But bees are not the only pollinators. There's some beetles that pollinate as well. And there are moths and butterflies that also pollinate. Beneficial in an aesthetic kind of way. Who doesn't enjoy looking at a monarch or a viceroy or a guff fritillary flying through the air, you know, on a nice warm summer day? And it just kind of calms the soul. Another benefiter are the predators. Spiders are predators, and they can sometimes keep the pest populations down as well. And just insects eating other insects is very, very much a part of the urban ecosystem that we have here. And so that would be some of them. Of course, I was asked this question years and years ago, and I said, let's not also forget about the dung beetle, because if it wasn't for the dung beetle, we might have too much dung around. And so they're very beneficial as well.
So we need more dung beetles.
I would support the dung beetle cause, Bill.
There you go. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And John from Fishville is back online with another question, a follow-up on the red wine thing. John, you're on with Dr. Burton. Are you drinking red wine right now?
That was Joe.
But, hey, that red wine thing, I've used that, but let me add one thing to it. If you put a drop of dish
soap in there with that red wine, I think that will cause them to drown quicker.
Hmm. Well, that actually reminds me of another tip. And some people are plagued by wasps, and wasps are attracted to yellow. And so if you take like a yellow, a shallow yellow pan of some kind, I'm sure you could find yellow dishes at the dollar store, and you put soap water in there, wasps are attracted to those, and they'll drown as well.
Mm.
And so there you have it. That's a good tip, John.
Yeah, those fruit flies, they are a pain in the butt, I guarantee you. But I find that the red wine, like you, I like that red wine trap. It works great.
Yeah. And I suppose some grape juice would work too, but I think they're more attracted to that alcohol smell.
Or we're more attracted to that.
Well, that could be. Cause every evening thing, yes, I'm all for it. Yep.
Well, thanks for the tip, John. Thanks for calling back.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You, and we've got one more caller online we're going to get to right now, and this is Jamie from Calhoun, Texas. Jamie, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm actually from Calhoun, Louisiana.
Oh, okay. Well, it said Texas here, so they lied to me.
Yeah, long distance. But I live in a very sandy area, and I have several dogs, and I every year have a huge problem with fleas.
Okay. Well, one, do you treat your dogs for fleas and ticks?
Yes, I do. I use a lot of permethrin.
Permethrin, though. Okay.
Yeah, and I know it doesn't last very long. It'll kill them, but it's organic based or
it
something.
Is.
But yeah,
it's plant based. If you're having a huge problem with fleas, outside or inside?
Outside. It's outside.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
Where did the dogs sleep?
Well, I have two that sleep outside. And the thing about it is I can walk out there and never have the first one jump on me. But they, for some reason, they just like magnets to them. And the fleas find them and get on them. But I constantly spray. I keep a 2-gallon pump-up sprayer full all the time. And I get a pretty good workout going around pumping it up and spraying.
What are you spraying?
Permethrin.
Permethrin. Okay, yeah. Well, you may have to go to something else. You may have to go to, have you tried malathion?
No, I haven't.
Try malathion.
Malathion?
Yeah. Now, the thing about, the reason I asked you where your dogs sleep is because the immatures of fleas are look like little wormy things. Little dark, little wormy things. And that may be a breeding site for the fleas. And so you're seeing the adults, but you need to attack. If they're sleeping on any kind of bedding or something, look to see if that might be a breeding ground for the immatures as well.
I use cedar shavings as their bedding, trying to help there,
Yeah, but I don't know if cedar shavings would be effective against termites or not. They're so just darn tough, you know. They really are. They're hard bodied, and not a lot can get to them. But try spraying malathion and see if that knocks down the populations, and maybe talk to your vet and see if there might be something better that you can treat the dog with. I know that there's one shot or medication or pill that you can get that's effective for 6 months on ticks and fleas.
Okay.
Yeah, check.
Okay.
So malathion for the yard, check with your vet about a different treatment strategy.
Okay. Can I ask you one more question?
Well, we're running out of time. I'm sorry, but we've got to get on to our next show, but thank you.
Thanks for your call, Jamie.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. Mm-hmm. You are listening or have been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And I want to thank you again for joining us, Beverly.
My pleasure, Bill, always.
Right. And this program is produced by Red River Radio and is supported by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. We'd like to thank each of you for calling tonight. I want to thank Wally Derleth for handling the phones all by himself tonight. And we remind you, the next edition of What's Bugging You will be on June 16th. The next edition of Bird Calls will be the week before on June 9th. And coming up this Thursday, it's Health Matters here on Red River. River Radio. We are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. This is KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado, Camden Magnolia, KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches, and KTYK Overton Tyler Kilgore. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is coming up next right here on Red River Radio.